of Phoenix and amateur radio is doing. And in the following 2 weeks, we'll concentrate on packet radio. We will start with the basics and answer all the questions. We'll have Dan Meredith, a local CISOP, and, of course, BBS, et cetera, operator. And remember, too, that September 7th is Amateur Radio Public Awareness Day. What are the local clubs doing for it this year? I haven't heard much about it, and if any clubs have any things occurring for the Amateur Radio Public Awareness Day, let me know so I can pass it along. I'm not sure what anybody's doing for it, so we need to be aware. Our number is 241-1510, 241-1510, or 1-800-293-KFNN. Give us a call now for any announcements, club events, buying or selling equipment that you might have, that you might have bought by mistake at Tut Hill and you want to sell, or any questions that you might have of our guest, Joe Mell, and we'll again have him on in a minute or two. And his and our phone number again for that is 241-1510 or 1-800-293-KFNN. I want to remind everybody that the Southwestern Division Conference, the American Radio Relay League Southwestern Division Conference, will take place at the Safari Resort here in Scottsdale October 11th, 12th, and 13th. Make sure that you make arrangements for being there. There's going to be so much stuff going on, from exhibits to tech sessions to prizes. I was even told that a local ham, John Moore, NJ70, is going to give us a seminar on tea hunting at that event. So everybody should make plans to be there. And there's also, whether you're licensed or not, you'll be interested in attending. Let's see, young people will be the speakers at the, there will be a young people's group. Let's see, are you interested in amateur radio recruiting, instructing, or Elmering? Then you're invited to the ARRL Educational Workshop at Scottsdale, which will be part of this, of course, convention on Friday, October 11th from noon to 5 p.m. You'll hear speakers give 20-minute presentations on their successes with amateur radio education activities, public relations, and teaching one-on-one. If you know someone is interested, give them the details. So, again, this is another example of getting more youth and more people involved in amateur radio. During the last week, I put the Stacker program on my personal computer at home, and it increased my hard drive space by about 14 million bytes. I don't know if anybody's ever used a Stacker program, but it certainly works well. It doubles, almost doubles your hard drive. I'm really pleased with it, especially with the new graphics I've got with my new SVGA monitor and graphics card. I also run many new programs due to the increase in my RAM memory. I went from 512 to over a meg, of course. All these upgrades were done at one place, Showtronics. I mean, why go anywhere else? When I was down at Showtronics, I took a tour of their new building, which houses the new assembly line for putting together their computer systems. You see, Showtronics builds so many systems each and every week that they need this assembly line. It allows each person on the line to do one task, thus eliminating errors. There are three check stations where all the systems are going over again and again and again. Software is loaded in another area and then checked by another person. It's truly an amazing, amazing setup. Obviously, the reason they need this is the fact that they sell so many systems. And, of course, the reason they sell so many systems is due to their low price. From a 286 for $939 complete to the powerful 386 with 4 meg RAM, 64 cache, 80 meg hard drive, 2 ports, an SVGA monitor, all for $1,649 complete. Showtronics, open 7 days a week with 24 hours a day support. They also have a BBS you can get involved in, which is one of the biggest west of the Mississippi. 15 computers on display to test your, to test drive yourself. Free computer classes, just call them and they'll, and you can take a class free. And the first class is 8 hours long, and yet it's free, 6 to 8 hours long. And the famous, remember the famous free diskettes, just for stopping in and mentioning this show. So don't shop anywhere else for a computer. Shop Showtronics, 1831 West Rose Garden Lane, north of Bell Road, off of 19th Avenue. Their phone number, 256-2266, 256-2266. Showtronics, the more you know about computers, the better Showtronics looks, and that's a fact. First licensed in 1958, Joe Mell, K0OV, is a registered professional engineer in California. He's head of the transmitter subdivision section at Hughes Aircraft Company. He's experimented in Oscar ATV, slow scan television, DX, and Packet. But Joe's favorite ham activity is trying out new ideas in direction finding. He recently developed the HF Homer and the Handy Tracker, which were described in his monthly column in 73 Magazine, which he writes, of course, each month. His book on transmitter hunting was published by Tab Books in 1987. He serves as a technical advisor to ARRL headquarters, and he's written new material on radio direction finding for the 91 ARRL handbook. I want to welcome Joe Mell to KFNN and Ham Radio and More. Good afternoon. Okay, Joe? Okay, I don't have very much volume on you.
All right, well, I'll speak up a little bit.
Okay. Okay, for some reason we're cutting in and out. I don't know what it is. Okay, are you hearing me fine?
Hearing you just right.
Okay, I don't know why this is acting up. All right, I'm sorry. Anyway, let's start out, Joe, from the beginning.
I'm not hearing you at all.
He's not here. Okay. All right, now you should be hearing me. I don't know what's happening. All of a sudden, we're hearing you're going in and out. Okay. Okay, first of all, Joe, I apologize for this. What is transmitting hunting, and why, of all the diverse activities in amateur radio, do you find this part the most fascinating and the most exciting?
Transmitting is, I've been fascinated with it ever since I first got into ham radio. Where you're going to end up, always a surprise. It's just nothing but surprises in transmitter hunting.
Okay, I apologize if we're having trouble with this line for some reason, so please bear with us, Joe. I apologize for this. Okay, yeah, because I have it up as high as I can. All right, everybody out there, please bear with us. We've had no problems with the phone, seriously, Joe, in the last few weeks, and then all of a sudden, you must have had the right food today or something, and you're lucky that we're having the problem with you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, well, I have no problem hearing you now. I have to push a certain button to keep you on. That's the only thing. Okay, I've used the term sport of amateur radio to promote this show for the last week or so, and I've talked to a lot of people about the sport of amateur radio, and people have laughed and said, what do you mean the sport? How can there be a sport of amateur radio? Tell us, you know, why do you consider tea hunting an athletic event, and explain to us what the sport really is and why tea hunting is one of the last competition parts of amateur radio.
Well, it's a sport in that it's a sport, depending on how you do it, of course. We have two different kinds of transmitter hunting I could talk about. The kind that you are probably most familiar with involves using a vehicle and looking for a transmitter that may be many miles away. Equipment and your skill counts, just as it does, for example, in racing automobiles. It gets even more sport-like when you start talking about international radio direction finding competition, which is very popular in Europe and in Asia and just becoming popular here, such as we recently had at the Friendship Games, where it's all done on foot. Hams take radio direction finding gear in hand and walk or run around a course trying to find a number of different transmitters in an area that may encompass many hundreds of acres. And certainly that takes not only a technical skill, but it also takes a certain amount of athletic ability as well. So I think it certainly classifies as a sport. As a matter of fact, it's called radio sporting in Europe and Asia where it's done.
And it was started in the European countries. Why didn't we come up with this? How come they're ahead of us on this aspect of amateur radio?
I'm not really sure why it's never caught on, as the on-foot aspect of it has never caught on as much here. It may just be our American culture. We like to do things in our automobiles, and we may not be as athletic as they are in certain other countries. But over in Europe, they they tend to not do as many things in their cars, I guess, so the on-foot aspect of it appeals to them more.
Well, I know that when I go out tea hunting with John Moore, one of his complaints is, or not necessarily complaints, but one of his statements is that he enjoys the fact that after you spend about 30 minutes or 25 minutes or whatever in a car getting to where we're going, it's certainly much more fun if then we can take the portable equipment finding, portable sniffer and go finding it, rather than as soon as we get there in the mobile, there it is. So he enjoys the on foot, and I don't know why no one else would, or I think it's going to catch on pretty strong in the United States.
Well, I agree. I think the on-foot aspect is important. Certainly to me, a hunt without some sort of what we call a sniff at the end, which is sort of an on-foot exercise to find the transmitter once you've driven to the area, a hunt really isn't, to me, complete without a sniff. Now, I have to add that many of our hunters are getting up in years. Certainly the radio sporting hunts, the on-foot hunts are not for the real old folks, or not for the folks that don't have a lot of physical ability. But we have people with that are up in years. Certainly one of the transmitter hunters here in Southern California is in his 70s, and he's an excellent hunter. He doesn't do much on foot hunting, but he's excellent in a vehicle. There is a gentleman in Santa Barbara that participates on almost every transmitter hunt. His name is Dennis. I can't think of his last name. He is blind. Now, that certainly might be a real impediment if he had to do it on foot, but it turns out in a vehicle, listening to the signal and navigating, he is excellent at it.
Well, I certainly like it. I know that a couple months ago in a tea hunt here, when John and I hit it, the average time took about 20 minutes for the average team to get to where the location was that we hit it, but we buried it underground, and it took them another 35 minutes on foot. And they really, I mean, I thought that was very, of course, I hit it, so I didn't have to look, but I think that the majority of people who were hunting found it very enjoyable to spend the time to try to find it on foot. So I agree with you. I think that is a good sport, and hopefully more and more people will get into tea hunting. We only have about 6-7 teams that that hunt every month, and we do have a tea hunt every month in Phoenix on the second Saturday of the month. But in California, you have a few more tea hunts than us. You want to tell us about how many you have and what type of tea hunts they have? They are?
It depends on the month, but almost every month here in Southern California, if you include the area from Santa Barbara to San Diego, encompassing Los Angeles and Orange and Riverside counties, there are anywhere from 15 to 18 transmitter hunts. Now, they're all put on, in general, by different groups. Some of them are put on by clubs and others by non-club groups. But they all have pretty much a regular schedule, and if someone wants to, they can readily go on 2 or 3 transmitter hunts every weekend without having to drive too terribly far. So the hunters out here are extremely serious. Some of them are on repeaters, others of them are on simplex channels. Some of them have a very limited boundary of maybe only a few hundred square miles. Others, well, the so-called all-day hunts are really all weekend hunts, because the boundaries for them are the continental USA.
Okay, and another thing here, we only have one type of tea hunt. We only have a 2 meter. Sometimes we use 440 for a remote base, etc., but basically we just have 2 meter hunts. I know in California you don't even, and then the winner of our tea hunt is the first person to find the transmitter. I'm told that in California that's not even the main tea hunt you have. You have more, I don't know to use the word endurance, but efficiency, I guess would be the word, right?
In general, most of the hunts, the winner is the person that gets there with the lowest mileage, not the first one to get there. Now, there's a lot of controversy about rules, and that's maybe one of the reasons why we have so many different hunts, because some hams like one set of rules and some like another, and some like preferably no rules at all. But a time hunt is good. It's excellent practice for finding jammers or interference that you need to get rid of right away. So that's a good advantage. However, some of the hams feel that encourages reckless driving and unsafe practices. And also, one of the disadvantages of a time-only hunt is that if you happen to hear that the hidden transmitter has been found, a lot of hens feel, well, I might as well go home because now I know I can't win.
Well, in our hunts, we don't tell anybody when we found it. They basically put on a special frequency on the little transmitter, and then that's how we acknowledge that we have found it, and then everybody continues to look for it. So we eliminated that one problem.
That's good. We try to do that here, too, of course, but sometimes the word does manage to get out. The other nice thing about the mileage hunt, though, is it does encourage, as you say, efficient hunting. Particularly on an all-day hunt, you don't feel like stopping for lunch is going to put you out of the competition. And it's always kind of interesting because sometimes the last person to find the hidden transmitter ends up being the winner because he was the most efficient. So there's always a surprise at the end when you total up the scores. Now, sometimes there are disadvantages to mileage-only hunts, and one of the disadvantages is that the hider feels he may never be able to go home because people tend to dilly-dally. To prevent that, sometimes there is a time penalty associated with the hunt or a time limit. As I say, every hunt has slightly different rules, and we try to accommodate all the tastes in the various hunts that we do have. In a place like Phoenix, where you probably don't have enough ham population to support that many hunts, it becomes a little more difficult for you because you do have to try to find one set of rules that satisfies everybody, and that can be difficult.
How many people or how many teams tend to go on a hunt that you're usually involved with? I mean, we only have, like I say, six or seven. What is your general people? How many does attend?
600 or 700 is a pretty good number, actually. I wouldn't be ashamed of that at all. Most of our hunts, the nighttime hunts, the popular hunts, we have anywhere from 15 to 18 teams. And a team can be anywhere from one person to a whole van full. I've taken 7 or 8 people on a transmitter hunt, and that can get a little bit wild when you have all those backseat drivers. But some hunts, some of the less popular hunts, particularly the UHF hunts, 440, 220, 6 meters, have fewer people. We consider ourselves lucky to get 5 or 6 teams, and that's a pretty good crowd. Every once in a while, some months, if the weather's bad or something like that, you'll only have a couple, but nevertheless, the hunt goes on.
So then we should feel pretty proud that in our population, I think we have about 9,000 hams in the state of Arizona. I don't have that in front of me exactly. When we get 6 teams almost each and every time, we should be pretty fortunate. Okay, we'll get back to you, Joe, in one moment, and we'll go for a trivia question. Again, our number is 241-1510. I know I'm having difficulties. We found out what the problem is, and it involves the air conditioning. I know that sounds crazy, but that's basically what it is. So our number is 241-1510 or 1-800-293-5366. If you have any questions at all about tea hunting or direction finding, radio direction finding, Joe has written a book, which we'll, of course, get into just a little later. Jim Stevens, KK7C from Antennas West, was at Tud Hill this weekend, and boy, did he have a crowd around his booth all the time. I want to thank each of you for stopping and mentioning that you knew about him from this show. I thank all of you who purchased something from him. After all, Antennas West does sell all types of antennas and accessories, as you know, and they have quick launch packages, solar power supplies, along with quickly made QSL cards. In fact, one listener this week sent me a QSL card and mentioned on it that it was made by Antennas West. So if you have any questions or need any merchandise, by all means, give Jim a call, and he can help you. Now, I was amazed that I don't know how many of you attended his HF seminar his HF antenna seminar yesterday, but it went on. It was only scheduled, I believe, for half an hour to an hour. It went on for almost 3 hours. People were asking him questions, and then people continued, even when he went to his booth, to ask him questions. There was such a demand that he had to give another seminar at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So obviously, he is extremely, extremely knowledgeable about antennas, and anybody at all that has any questions, and they were answered yesterday, I'm sure, by him, knows that he's Mr. Antenna when it comes to questions about HF and antennas and how to use an antenna in a very, very, very small place or where there are deed restrictions where you can't put up large antennas. Anyway, that's Jim Stevens at Antennas West. And I appreciate everybody who bought a tiger's tail. I saw lots of tiger's tails on HTs yesterday, so he told me he went through quite a few of them. So if you're interested in any products that Antennas West has, give them a call, 1-800-926-7373, 1-800-926-7373. Don't call him till Tuesday, probably. Give him a chance to rest up. He's probably on his way driving home now, so probably now. Let him get home tomorrow and rest. You guys wore him out with all the questions. Okay, back to Joe. Let's go with a trivia question. And again, our number is 241-1510 or 1-800-293-5366. We're going to give the winner, Jim Stevens, actually, from Antennas West, going to give the winner 100 free QSL cards, which is kind of neat. Everybody can use some QSL cards. And this is a pretty easy question. And Joe, lay it on us.
Okay, very good. To preface the question, I'll say that there are a number of different radio direction finding methods that hams use, and it tends to vary from place to place. I know that the methods used by the hams in Phoenix may not be at all the same in general as the methods we use here in Southern California. In fact, we may end up talking about that a little bit later. Out here, most of the hams, when they tee hunt, use a quad or a beam rotating on top of their car, and if you think that doesn't look funny, it gets a lot of stares. Other places, there are other methods that are used, and there is a method of radio direction finding that's very common on vehicles, and it uses what you might call a ring or a series, a circular group of vertical antennas. Now, they may either be vertical dipoles or they may be monopoles, you know, ground plane antennas arranged in a circle. There is a name for that, and it's named after a fellow that sort of discovered an effect that led to the discovery of this method of direction finding. So the trivia question is, what kind of a direction finding system uses a ring of antennas, vertical antennas, which are switched around in a circle, one after the other? And I might add, since there might be two answers to that might appear to be correct, I'm looking for the answer that corresponds to a device that would be used with an FM type of radio, like you'd use with your own 2-meter rig.
Okay, well, I have a hunch, Joe, that that we're going to get a winner awfully quickly because every one of our lines lit up on that one.
Well, good. Terrific. I suspect that method may be very popular in Phoenix for reasons that we might want to talk about later.
Okay. And especially if they're, and then when someone hung up and then the calls came on, they were lit up again. Okay. Until we definitely have the winner, which I know we do, but as soon as I get the name, let's go into a little. There's a book that was made, and of course you wrote it, and it's called Transmitter Hunting, Radio Direction Finding Simplified by Joseph Mell, K0OV, and also I guess someone else helped you, a co-author, Thomas Curley, WB6UZZ. You probably had the main input, right?
Most of it. I ended up writing about 90% of it and doing about 10% of the illustrations, and my partner Tom, who is an accomplished photographer, he took that really neat cover photo, for example. He did about 90% of the artwork and about 10% of the manuscript. So, and it was great to have him, too, to knock ideas off of. He and I have loved to sit around and knock around new ideas for neat new radio direction finding methods.
Well, I want to tell everybody who's not familiar with this book that if you're at all interested in radio direction finding, transmitting hunting, all kinds of different interesting things, which we're going to get into just a little bit more. I mean, this book has over 300 pages, and we'll tell you how to get it a little later. It's definitely a book that you should consider. Now, in there and in some of the articles that you've written that I've read, in 73 Magazine, we talk about an organization called FARS. What does that stand for? And tell us a little about it.
Okay, it's a relatively new organization. The Friendship Amateur Radio Society was formed by a group of hams in the Portland, Oregon area to provide a medium for international exchange of ham radio operators, particularly with two countries, the Soviet Union and Japan, for reasons that I'll explain later. It is a group which has sponsored a number of international events and is planning more to bring hams together in a spirit of competition. And, of course, that competition includes radio direction finding, which is how I got involved in it.
Okay. And they're spearheading a drive to get it into a demonstration, to get it as a demonstration sport for the Olympics. Is that correct?
That's correct. The on-foot form of radio direction finding, not the vehicle form, there's quite a push for that, and certainly there's international support for it because there are international on-foot radio direction finding competitions already being held on a fairly regular basis in Europe. Unfortunately, we in the U.S. have not been active participants in that, so Friendship Radio Society and another group called the World Radio Sport Federation, which is an organization in the East Coast, both those two organizations are trying to get U.S. hams more active in radio sporting and through that medium get it involved in the world competitions such as the Olympics.
What kind of possibility percentage-wise do you think we have of getting this into the Olympics realistically?
I have not been too involved in working with that end of it, so I don't have a strong feeling for the possibilities, but I don't think it's going to happen very soon. It's certainly very difficult to get a sport into the Olympics, and I wouldn't expect to see it within the next few years. But if it takes off in the U.S., as it has taken off in Japan and China and the European and Scandinavian countries and in the Soviet Union, I think the day will come when it does become a part of international competition, if not in the Olympics, maybe in something like the Goodwill Games.
Well, I think that would be absolutely neat. I mean, the greatest thing ever, and it would absolutely give a big lift to amateur radio, certainly put it into mainstream media again. Okay, Dan Meredith, N7MRP, is our winner. I have him on the line, and let me get him here. Dan, welcome to Ham Radio and More. How you doing today?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Lev?
Pretty good. I assume that was an easy answer for you.
Yeah, and that was all because of John Moore. He was the one that told me all about it, too. It's the Doppler antenna system.
That, of course, is correct, Dan. Joe, what do you feel that the Doppler is the best the best system for tea hunting today or in the mobile, or do you feel there's something better? Do you feel if we put big stacked beams on our vehicle, we'd do better than a Doppler? Whoops, you didn't hear that. Okay, well, my question was, Joe, do you feel that a Doppler system is the best way to find a transmitter today, or do you think beams are a little better way?
It all depends on the situation. I understand that Dopplers are quite popular in the Phoenix area, and in the Phoenix area, the hidden transmitters are fairly close and fairly high power and usually run vertical polarization of their transmitters. Out here in Southern California, that's not the case. We have a lot of hills and mountains. Hiders like to hide down in the valleys, in between the hills, and bounce signals all around in the mountains. And they like to use rather strange forms of polarization, either horizontal or occasionally circular. And Doppler forms of direction finding often are fooled in those situations. They don't have the sensitivity of a beam, of course, because a beam can have 10 dB gain or more. And when the signal is not vertically polarized, the reflections, which may be vertical even from a horizontal transmission, can fool them much more easily. So out here, I, for example, when I go on a tee hunt, have a Doppler and a quad on the van, and I tend to use the quad to get into the area, and then if the signal is vertical and strong, I use the Doppler for the final homing in process because it's faster when I'm driving around. I don't have to manually turn the antenna. So each has their place, but it really depends on the situation. The people that hunt for jammers and interference like that, where the signal is strong and vertically polarized here in Southern California, do prefer Dopplers, particularly when they're hunting alone.
Dan, any chance we're going to get you into the transmitter hunting fold?
Well, if I get some changes made with work schedule, I usually have to work when we do it, but that'll all be changing. So probably have to get in touch with John. Maybe John can get me going on it a little bit.
Well, he's my teammate, so he's our teammate, my teammate. We name our teams here in Phoenix, and well, I hate to give you the name of ours, but we call ourselves, because both of our daughters are involved in our team, so we call ourselves the Yuppies and Puppies.
Well, that's a pretty decent name, so it's definitely one that I would call unique.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening, Dan. Thanks for participating. You're going to win, and Jim Stevens from Antennas West will get in touch with you, or probably he'll just send you the cards. I don't see any reason he needs to get in touch with you. Just mail them to the address, P.O. box that you gave, and you'll get 100 free QSL cards. I think that's kind of neat. From Antennas West, 1-800-926-7373. And thanks again, Dan.
Thanks. I really need the QSL cards anyway. Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay. Do you need any custom draperies? Need a new custom bedspread? A pillow? Seat cushions? Want a new comforter for your kids' bed? These are just a few of the myriad of custom products you can get at Wallpaper World. Yes, along with the lowest, and I mean lowest prices on wallpaper and blinds, Wallpaper World also has their own custom workroom to make all your custom treatments. And of course, they sell the fabrics also at low discount prices every day. If you need wallpaper today to hang today, go to Wallpaper World and select from their large in-stock selection of wallpaper. I mean, they might have 600-700 patterns in each store which you can take home, all at low discounted prices. And remember, they guarantee to beat the price. I mean, they guarantee to beat the price on any wallpaper from any wallpaper book sold in America. There's no reason to shop anywhere else. They have all the brand names and more, and all at super savings every day. If you've never been in a Wallpaper World store, you owe it to yourself to go. That's Wallpaper World, with 6 great locations in the Valley, including Mesa, Chandler, Scottsdale, Paradise Valley, Central Phoenix, and Northwest Phoenix. Or you can call 272-4788, 272-4788 tomorrow for the Wallpaper World nearest you. They really do make selecting decorating treatments an enjoyable experience. By the way, tell them that I sent you in, and they will give you an extra 10% discount off the normal discounted prices. So go to Wallpaper World. Okay, Joe, we were talking about in Phoenix, we have basically only 2-meter tee hunts. Tell us the different types of tee hunts that you have. I know you have HF, et cetera, and they're efficiency hunts, but on what bands do most of the people tend to really want to go transmitter hunting?
Okay, well, we don't have any HF hunts anymore, at least on a competitive basis. At one time we had a 10-meter hunt. It was held at the same time as the 6-meter hunt. In fact, usually it was both transmitters on the air simultaneously, and since almost everyone was hunting on 6 meters instead of 10, because it's a little easier to hunt there, the 10-meter hunt kind of went away. But we do have regular hunts on 6 meters, 2 meters, 220, 450, and I really wouldn't be surprised one of these days, since it's becoming popular, to have a hunt on 1200 megahertz out here, but we don't have one yet. But actually, the 220 and 450 hunts are only once a month. The rest of the hunts are all on 2 meters, and almost all of them are on one coordinated frequency, which is 146.565 megahertz. There are a couple of hunts that are on repeaters, but most of them are on that one frequency now.
Okay, and how does the strategy change? What when you, let's talk from personal experience. When you go hunting on 1200, that's a lot different than going on HF, and you, of course, you're not doing that much anymore, or even 2 meter. What different strategies do you use depending on the frequency?
Well, the strategies are much the same, but it becomes much more difficult on 220 and 450 because of the reflections and multipath. There's a lot of reflections and multipaths, and maybe I should explain what that means. It means that the signals basically bounce off things. They bounce real well off mountains. On 2 meters, one of the favorite things for a hider to do is to bounce off a large mountain such as Mount Baldy, and he can be east of the starting location, but because of the hills and bouncing it off the mountains, which are to the north, everybody starts off from the starting point and goes north until they can't go north anymore and they realize they've been fooled again and they have to go where he really is. That effect is much more pronounced on 220 and 450. The higher you go, the greater the reflections. And even smaller objects reflect at 220 and 450. The buildings don't reflect nearly as much on 2 meters as they do on 220 and 450. And the mountains, of course, reflect even more. So signals basically just bounce around like billiard balls or ping pong balls on 450, and it makes it particularly difficult to hunt there. So it's a lot of fun for the hiders to find a really low spot and bounce it off everything in sight, trying to fool the hiders or the hunters.
Do you usually win the tee hunts when you go?
I win my share, but I will have
to... That sounds modest.
Well, keep in mind... We have a lot of very good hunters. Almost everyone that's out on a regular basis is in this, you know, as a real competitor, just as I am, and they've been at it for a few years, and they've developed their skills, and there are a lot of extremely good hunters out here. I'm glad, by the way, because if I ever needed to be found, if I was in distress or something like that, I know I could trust the transmitter hunters of Southern California to find me. They're good, and I win my share, but... I can't say that I can say, well, tonight I think I'll just win this one and go out and do it. It doesn't happen. And since, as you know, winning the hunt usually means you have to hide it the next month, there's a certain strategy to the controlled second that a lot of us try to use, too.
Right. In fact, you brought up a very important part there, and I know I've been concentrating more on, you know, on the tee hunts and the fun of that than on radio direction finding, per se. But there's a lot more to radio direction finding than simply finding a transmitter on a Saturday evening or a Saturday afternoon or whatever, just so that you can say you won and then go eat pizza afterwards. There are many more things, and you want to relay some of the things that you find radio direction finding absolutely a necessity for, and of course what it's used for.
When I give my talks on transmitter hunting at clubs, I point out that every ham ought to know a little something about radio direction finding. Whether or not you want to get into the great fun of this competitive transmitter hunting is up to you. But you'll probably find some use for radio direction finding at some point in your ham career. The most likely use for it will be finding some sort of noise or interference, finding that aquarium heater that's bothering you, and which may be in your neighbor's house five doors down, or finding some sort of power line noise or cable television interference or something like that. Uses much the same techniques. Certainly also there's the search and rescue aspect of it. A number of hams throughout the country, I'm thinking particularly of New Mexico and Utah, but elsewhere too, are using their radio direction finding skills to help locate downed aircraft, the emergency locator transmitters that come on when the small planes go down. Now, that's certainly a worthwhile public service. And there are other uses for radio direction finding. Certainly we like to do it as demonstrations at our local youth science center to help interest kids in getting into ham radio. So there's a lot of different ways that radio direction finding can play an important part in ham radio and in just your life as being a technical person in general, besides the competitive end of it.
Okay, well, I have a caller on the line, which is kind of interesting, so let me get him on here. Okay, John, you're on the air. Ham Radio More, thank you for calling.
Hi, and this is your tea-hunting partner, NJ7E.
Hello.
And I had a couple of things for Joe.
Okay.
How you doing, Joe?
I don't know if we can hear each other, if we have to do simplex or duplex here, but I'll say hello to you. Good afternoon. Good to talk again.
I think we're going to have to use simplex. a couple of things for Joe. The first one is just wanted to pass along to him that the Southwest Division Convention, we'd like to challenge those L.A. tea hunters to an interstate tea hunt because, you know, we can hardly get international if we can't do it interstate. So Southwest Division Convention in October, and Lynn's got the details. We're going to have a tea hunt on Saturday night, and we'd love as many of you guys as possible to come along.
Look to be thrown down. I will pass the word to the Southern California tea hunters, and if I'm not sure I can make it. We've been talking about going to the convention, but I may have some other family activities. But I know that if I mention it to some of the Southern California hams, that I wouldn't be surprised if some of them will show up. We had the FARS games up in Portland. I didn't have to put out the word very far before we had a couple of competitors. I'll bet we can get some to come to your hunt. How'd that be?
John, are you able to hear Joe?
I couldn't hear all of that, no.
Okay. I don't know what's happening because, John, we don't have any problem hearing you. So it may be actually our line to California because, when John talks, we don't have any problem. I don't have to push the button or anything. It's only with Joe, so could it possibly be we have a bad line? Okay. Well, anyway, I wish I can get you two hearing each other. Want to try again, Joe, an answer to John?
Okay. I don't know if he can hear me this time, but I'll shorten it to say that I think it's terrific, and I'll bet I can get some hunters out there, and we'd love to hunt. One of the things the Southern California hunters like to do is hunt in new territories where they don't...
Okay, did you hear most of that, John?
No, I got that. Well, that's good, Joe. I don't know. I thought I heard before that you might not make it yourself. But anyway, if you can, we'd love that. And otherwise, whoever you can get out. We do have some new territory here. You guys can hunt with the Gila monsters and the rattlesnakes out here. And we've got mountains, too. The other thing, a more serious question here, and I'll pose this question and then hang up so I can hear it on the radio.
Okay.
And that is, we have quite an experienced cadre of tea hunters. We don't get very many new people, and I think one reason is that they see all these folks with the expensive equipment and say, hey, how can we compete in this? Now, I'd throw in a caveat, and that is we have one team that hunts with a beam that does just fine, and it's just a four-element beam. But I'd like you to address how we can get more people into this sport, because we love it, and the more people we get, the better. With that, I'll hang up, and Len, I'll let you take it.
Okay, John, I really appreciate your call, and I apologize for this phone problem I seem to be having. Okay, catch you later, John.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, Joe, we're back.
First of all, I want to mention that I want to thank John for calling and thank him again for his help. He was one of the people that helped out in the writing of the book. His experiences in Arizona have been many in terms of both the sport end and the enforcement end of tea hunting, and he's got a lot to offer in that area, too, and I want to thank him about that. To answer the question, now, as we talked earlier, a lot of the hunters in the Phoenix area do like the Doppler systems. The hunts that they have there are really good for Dopplers, apparently, and as a result, that seems to be the method of choice. And Doppler direction finders can be expensive. The commercial ones start nowadays at about $700 or $800 if you want to buy them directly. Now, you can build your own Doppler. We have plans in the book, and I suspect that if you bought all the parts new, you'd be paying around $100, $100 and a quarter for all the parts. But not that many hams like to build that sort of thing, and so again, that's a little bit of a disincentive to get into transmitter hunting. I would say, though, that out here where we hunt, almost everyone uses the beams and quads, and that's a much less expensive setup, and it's certainly a good setup for beginners. If you have two people in the car, turning the beam is not a particular problem, and it works very well. And most of the setups out here are really quite simple. It's a commercial Yagi, such as made by Cushcraft or KLM or one of those companies, or quad, which you can make out of PVC pipe and ordinary wire, and an attenuator. The whole setup, if you start out and you don't build any external S-meters or all the other paraphernalia that you could build, can't cost you more than about $25. So it really doesn't have to be expensive, and we just have to get the word out to hams that despite the fact that there's 300 pages in the book, that it's not all that tough and that they can do it. And I guess we just have to be good ambassadors and get the word out.
Okay, well, let's talk about your book in the last 5 or 6 minutes that we have here. And again, it's called Transmitter Hunting, Radio Direction Finding Simplified by Joseph Mell. And it's by Tab Books. And I know you can get it from the ARRL, their bookshop, and of course from 73 Amateur Radio Today magazine. They, I don't know, I think they sell it also. Do you have any other, I mean, it's probably at Walden, or they can order it through Walden or any of the local bookstores, correct?
It was in B. Dalton for a while, but they tend to put in new books, and if they don't sell millions of them, they don't tend to keep them. And of course, ham radio books, as much as you and I like them, they tend not to be a big item for the public. So it's a little hard to find them, but they can be found in, certainly can be ordered through, any good bookstore can order it for you. Certain technical bookstores also carry them, so if you have, in whatever town you live in, a technical bookstore, that's a good place to get it. As you mentioned, the ARRL and 73 Magazine do have it in their mail order bookstore. You can get it directly from Tab Books, or you can get it directly from me. I have a few copies, and I can make it available that way, too.
Okay, you want to give a phone number if they wanted to, or if they had some extra questions that they wanted to ask of you. Also, in the same time that you tell us that phone number you want to give out, or address, tell us what your HF Homer and Handy Tracker is, which I know the plans were in 73 Magazine, and those are, you told me about one of them that just fits on your HT, and now that would be, to me, a very simple way to get started, do simple tea hunting.
It's good for on-foot tea hunting, what you might call sniffing at the end of the hunt. Certainly the Handy Tracker was not intended for starting a competitive hunt in a vehicle, but it was just one simple way to get some directivity with your handheld. If you have a handheld, you know that you can do what's called body fading by holding the handheld up close to your body and spinning around and listening for the weakest signal and saying, well, my body's shielding it from that direction, so it must be that way. Well, there are other ways you can get some directivity, and the Handy Tracker is one of them. It uses two antennas, which are switched back and forth, and as you turn it around on top of the handheld radio, there's a point at which the tone that it's putting in the audio disappears, and you can get the line of bearing from that, and then there's another mode that tells you which way it is, in front of you or behind you. I would be happy to send plans for the Handy Tracker to anyone that sends me a self-addressed stamped envelope. I'll be glad to give you my address, and I'll include with that information on how they can get the book from me if they'd like. How would that be?
That sounds great to me. Let's go.
Okay, you can mail it to me. My name is Joe, and the last name is spelled M-O-E-L-L. The address is P.O. Box 2508. In Fullerton, F-U-L-L-E-R-T-O-N, California, 92633. Just send an SASE, and I'll drop that in the mail to you. And I'll even include a couple other things about tea hunting. I'll send a list of our Southern California tea hunts, and you can ooh and ah at that. How'd that be?
That sounds good. That's Joe Mell at P.O. Box 2508, Fullerton, California, 92633. And again, anybody who hasn't seen this book, if you have the slightest interest in radio direction finding, that the guy in the neighborhood, or you don't know where he is in the neighborhood, is causing interference or something. You want to sniff him out. This book tells it all. I mean, you'll be able to find anything. On the last 2 minutes that I want to have with this interview, if I can, tell us quickly, what is, if you can do it, what is the best hiding place or the most unusual tea hunt that you have ever been on?
Oh dear, I was afraid you'd ask something like that, because every hunt is a little bit different. When I give my talk, I talk about several unique ones. One of the things you were mentioning about, we were talking about earlier, is every hunt, I think, ought to end with a good sniff. And I'll just tell you a story. It may not be the best story, but it's a good one that we put on. We hid the transmitter. I have a small transmitter that is about the size of the book. It's built in a box that's about that size. It's about 7 by 10 by about an inch and a half high. It's complete with batteries, and it puts out about 100 milliwatts. And we've done everything with that transmitter. One day we gave it to a youngster when there was a carnival in town, bought him a whole bunch of tickets to the Ferris wheel, and said, here, take this thing on the Ferris wheel. And he rode the Ferris wheel for the better part of 2 hours as the hunters just tried to figure out why the signal was going up and down. And another thing we did with that transmitter once was to bury it in the foundation of a house that was under construction. The house was nearing completion, the roof was on, most of the wiring was in, but the fuse box wasn't connected up yet. So we took the antenna lead to the transmitter and hooked it up to one of the Romex wires that went all over the house, and buried the transmitter next to the in the foundation next to where the fuse box was going to be. I'm sure you've all heard or seen that ad that says, turn all your house wiring into a giant TV antenna. Well, we turned all that house wiring into a giant ham radio antenna. The hunters didn't have any trouble finding the house, but they wandered around for a couple of hours trying to figure out where in this house the signal was coming from. And they'd say, boy, it sure is hot by this outlet. Gosh, it sure is hot by this ceiling light fixture. Gosh, where is this thing? So finally somebody came up to me and said, I think it's one of these Romex cables. And then all I had to do was say, which one?
Okay, well, I think if we do this again, and we should, we'll exchange stories. And I think I can't exchange that many, but John Moore, and there's a lot of people out there, Mike Zussman and a few others, have gone on many, many tea hunts. And there's probably been some really unusual places that they've been hidden in. I really appreciate it, Joe. I'm sorry again for the problem we're having on hearing you every so often. I appreciate you coming on. If anybody's interested, and I hope there are, please get in touch with Joe about his book, Transmitter Hunting. Joe, again, 73s, and thank you for being on.
73 to you, and invite me back anytime. I love to talk about tea hunting.
Okay, thank you, Joe. Bye-bye. Okay, Ken Nichols, fellow ham, my friend, and fleet manager of Linda Brock, invites you to experience a whole new concept in automobile purchasing, a whole new concept in obtaining a new or used vehicle, an entirely different approach to owning your own a whole new vehicle. That's right. Ken Nichols has something almost unheard of in the automobile industry. Unheard of? Yes. Ken Nichols will sell you a vehicle, new or pre-owned, without any hassles, without the non-caring attitude, without the negotiating boiler type tactics. Ken Nichols will actually care about you and the price you pay for your new vehicle. Ken takes pride in what he does and what you, and really you alone, he wants you to be satisfied. You will receive his total concentration and personal service, along with the lowest price you can possibly get on any new vehicle you choose. Whether you want an Oldsmobile, a BMW, a Cadillac, a Buick Park Avenue like fellow ham head use, or any other vehicle, Ken Nichols is the place to go. Nobody can just walk in and buy a car from Ken Nichols. You have to call him in advance, make an appointment to get his fleet price. That's Ken Nichols, 228-2336, 228-2336. It'll be the start of a new way to buy a new car. Ken Nichols, 228-2336. Yesterday at Fort Tuthill, a friend of mine, Mark McFadden, KB7LPR, had a a massive heart attack, it was diagnosed, and fell, and he died, unfortunately, at Fort Tuthill, and that's why I've been a little shaken during this show. I hope that everybody will bear with me. I've lost a very dear friend. The ham radio community also lost a dear friend and a great ham. This is a gentleman who's been a ham for a little over a year, has amassed umpteen QSL cards in his room, his ham shack. It's a ham that he wouldn't, there's nothing he wouldn't do for anybody. And my heart goes out, and I really miss him. And I have a gentleman here also in the studio, Barney, KB7KOE, another friend of his, of course. People who know him know Barney. And Donna called. I have this, and she said Mark considered us to be the brothers he never had. He's always been sort of an outsider until we came along, Barney and myself. And if that's true, and if we gave a little bit of happiness to him in the last year, it was a total shock, of course, his massive heart attack, then I'm glad for the last year. As a fitting tribute, whether it's fitting or not, I'd certainly like to do it, and I like to devote the last 1 minute of this show for a minute of silence to honor Mark McFadden, KB7LPR, a ham and a good friend. This is Len Winkler, KB7LPW, and we're clear, and please give a minutes of silence to Mark McFadden. Thank you.